From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Maybe like I do, you always mean to be better at seed saving and it gets away from you. Well, right now is the perfect time with pen and paper or your cell phone in hand for making a list to look around the garden for what potential yields are coming up that you might want to grab at just the right stage to make more plants. Ken Drews is here today to tell us how, so more in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
You all know Ken Drews, author of 20 garden books, old friend, and my co-host of the online virtual garden club that resumes again in September. 20-ish years ago, he wrote a book called Making More Plants about all forms of propagation, including from seed, and seed saving is our topic today. Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm good, Margaret. Surprising. We've had a couple of days that are below 90, so that's welcome.
Yes, yes, yes. So we have to gripe a little because we're gardeners. Yeah, hot and dry has kind of been the thing. And obviously, we're in the Northeast and we're blessed compared to so many other regions of the country with havoc beyond imagination. But for us, it's been very dry and we've had some serious bouts of heat too.
Very dry. We had an inch and a half of rain this week, which is the first rain in about 3 weeks. So I feel hydrated, slightly hydrated. And it started with a very gentle rain. So the rain just didn't roll off the dry ground. It started to soak in. So
right.
I'm right. Thankful even for a little bit.
Hope springs eternal.
even in the summer.
It's been interesting as a longtime gardener in one place, as you are too, to watch the reaction of familiar plants that we've had for a long time in the same spot. Like we in shock, you know, they in shock too at the, what's this? This isn't my weather. Where's my weather? You know, and how some adapt and some don't. So for instance, speaking of sort of things making seed or fruit with seed in it, the apples are going to be a complete zero this year. They've all aborted. Oh. And you know, crab apples are at like half mast. Those are able to hold on a little better, you know, because I think the fruits are so much smaller. But all my winterberry hollies, which I have like 40 big mature shrubs, I mean, they're almost all aborted. They all dropped. You know, in self-defense, a plant will do that, right?
Yeah, and I've noticed that some trees, not in my garden, but in the surrounding areas, they have yellow leaves and they're dropping them already, which is kind of early. But as you're saying that, I can't grow the hollies very well because it's too shady here. But I guess here's another advantage of shade, because I don't have desperation. I mean, there's a lot of things that are flagged and they're not really wilted. They just have down facing leaves and they'll stay that way, but nobody's dead yet.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I haven't done the head count yet, but it might, you know, so again, speaking of saving seed and seed, with each generation of seed comes the potential for resilience of different kinds of genetic, of abilities in the genes to withstand what the previous generation has been going through and so on and so forth. It's not an overnight thing, but so maybe this is a good year everywhere for people to start saving seed for adaptation to, you know, some of the strains that we're going through locally. So,
well, you've
you know.
Lost your holly berries, but if even one plant had berries, that might be a plant that's drought tolerant.
Exactly. So, and we're oversimplifying, obviously, the miracle of genetics, but that's the basic idea. So just before we get started in the how-to and what we can do in our gardens right now, which things we should go look for that are doable for those of us who are more beginners than a geek like you, what's the craziest things, the biggest plant you ever grew from seed or the slowest thing you ever grew from seed? You know, you've grown trees and stuff?
Is that trees, sure. Sure. I have a maple tree that I started in Brooklyn. So that's it's probably, it could be 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's not a giant maple. It's a, well, I can't say that it's a cultivated variety because I started the seeds from a cultivated variety. So it's a son a or selection. Daughter. A selection.
Well, a it's selection, selection.
Right. That's a great cultivar. Fall color.
Okay. So you've even grown trees. And so, you know, when anyone sort of wants to dip into this subject and, you know, if they read, whether it's, you know, at like Seed Savers Exchange, they have information on the website about seed saving, obviously. And you know, or any in a book, in your book, Making More Plants, you know, it talks about wet and dry seeds, whether, you know, we're in the vegetable garden or elsewhere, it talks about wet and dry seeds. So is that kind of the overarching, if you can give us the quick, you know, version
well,
of that?
I still lecture sometimes on Making More Plants, but whenever I would say fruit, people think that fruits are like peaches, they're wet, but many, many fruits are dry. And I tell people that, and they're aghast. They're surprised that nuts are fruits and pods are fruits. Anything that has a seed inside is a fruit,
right?
Which is the old tomato is a fruit thing because there's right. seeds inside.
Right. Okay. So sometimes like with vegetables, you know, we break down the how to save the seed, like lettuce, we call a dry seeded crop, and mm-hmm. tomatoes or peppers, we call a wet seeded crop because they have like pulpy stuff inside right. in the latter case or not in the lettuce case. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so the tactic is guided by that because there's an extra step sometimes with the wet ones, right?
Well, there's an extra step sometimes with the dry ones too, because a lot of plants that I grow that have dry fruits, if you don't catch them at the right time, you've lost them. You missed
Boing.
Them. So a lot of things like columbine and poppies and stuff, when those fruits start to turn brown, I take small paper bags and put them over the fruit and tie them around the stems and just leave them until the stem of that has the fruit on it turns brown, cut them off, and bring them in the house to finish drying. And then the seeds all fall out and they're in the bottom of the bag.
Right. So it's proactive, anticipating what's going on. And that's why in the beginning I was saying right now, I mean, a lot of things have already set seed and that may be too late in some cases. Like I noticed at when the columbines were kind of getting ready, the chipmunks, the local chipmunks were like, standing up like it was a tapas bar or something, standing oh up at each columbine and like eating the little fruits, the pods, do you know what I mean? It was like they were almost ready and they were yummy. So.
Well, you got to beat them too. That's the thing. If you put a paper bag over it before they're even ready,
yeah.
then that's another way to protect them. And you can yeah. even cut them off and let them finish ripening upside down in the house in a nice, cool, dry, breezy place.
Yeah. So obviously we have to go look around. So what kinds of things, I mean, like I'm looking at Nicotiana, you know, the flowering tobaccos right now, and half the stems have seed pods that have already gone brown and burst open and half are still flowering. And, you know, it's all kind of confusing. So what are some, should we start with flowers and then we'll go on to vegetables or what do you think? Or should we start with what? what are some that you'd like us to scout for that you think are doable to get us going?
Okay. So Nicotiana is a good example. And it's nice because it keeps having those pods.
Yes.
So it's not like 1 minute and it's over.
Or else, yeah.
Look at those dried fruits. They have seams and then they split open and they just pour out their seed. So I go around and before they split open, right before actually, I go around with a coffee filter and I split them open and just pour the seed into the coffee filter and collect them that way. And I collect, you know, me. So I collect seed from the most fragrant one or the purple one or something. And then I sell them next year and see what happens. Because as you know, they don't really come true from seed when they're hybrids, unless they're heirlooms grown in isolation. And we don't really have that. Didn't you have problems saving your Nicotiana?
Yeah, I used to think I could. And, you know, I've been growing them a lot of different ones for maybe 25 or more years. And I let them self-sow. And so So S-O, not S-O-W. So I didn't have as distinctive a group as I had a decade or two ago. I had a lot more kind of sameness. I didn't have the very, very, very tall Nicotiana mutabilis with the pink and white mutable flowers. And I didn't have any, what's the one with the white, long white trumpets?
Sylvestris.
Yeah, Sylvestris. I didn't have any Sylvestris showing up. The trumpets are really, really long and narrow on a big plant. And, you know, I didn't have any of the dark, super dark colors. I still had green, I still had pink, I still had white, and sort of medium heights and shorter heights. But, you know, so I kind of mixed up. I got some seed, or I got some seedlings this year, and kind of reinvigorated, so that now the seed that's dropping at this time of year and later will hopefully give me back that look of 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah. Maybe you should just save some seeds from a couple.
A couple of goodies?
Just yeah. As a backup. I mean, it's pretty easy to do.
So coffee filter, you're saying. So yeah, I've sometimes tapped it into a cup, you know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cup, that's a good idea. Paper cup or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about marigolds, because that's really easy. A lot of people grow marigolds. And if you have a marigold and the flowers fade, you can picture this. They sort of shrivel up. They're like miniature shaving brushes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The fluff at the end. And if you just hold that dry fruit, and you pull on the fluff that used to be the flowers, there's seeds attached to the bottom of all of those. They just come right out. It's like a dandelion. There's a seed at the bottom of the fluff.
Right. It's like a little bouquet of seeds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Zinnias?
It's almost the same thing.
Yeah.
And things that have cones, like purple cone flower and Rudbeckia, black-eyed Susan, you can pick those when the cones are practically black. And if you hold them over a bowl, the cone part, and rub them with your thumb, the seeds will fall off the cone. But you don't want to take them all, because we want to leave plenty for the birds. But, you know, there's hundreds of seeds, so you don't really need 100 seeds. So you can share them.
Right. So just since we were just talking about flowers, I mean, looking ahead in September and October, especially like I think October where we are, but a lot of the meadow wildflowers, if we wanted to make more of those, we could anticipate, and like you said, kind of go look and wait until they're just about ready. And those are the ones for sort of winter sowing, not sowing right away.
Well, I guess with many perennials, you'd want to do it in March, you know, January to March. So you want to store them.
Yeah.
And really, I store all my seeds that aren't sown right away, and very few are sown right away. I store them dry. And if they come from a moist fruit, I clean the fruit off and have them dry, wash them if necessary, store them dry in envelopes inside a closed jar in the refrigerator.
So it's cold, but it's dry because you've closed the jar. Do you put any desiccant? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, desiccant. Sorry. You know, if I have some vitamins that came with some, I'll just pop them in there. So I don't really do a big number. You know, you could probably put something like rice in the bottom or something.
Yeah. But tight closed jars.
Oh,
the
yeah,
key.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you done like Verbena bonariensis? Now that's something that the tall verbena even though it's not native, it's so popular with butterflies, I think. In various surveys, it's been the most visited flower, you know, by butterflies in the average, you know, in gardens.
That's interesting. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, just that I was curious, you know, it sows itself where it wants to sow itself, usually near where it was. But what if you wanted to make a colony somewhere else? Would you collect those too?
Well, those are what we call hardy annuals, even though that's actually a tender perennial, but we grow it like it's as if it's a hardy annual, and larkspur, things like that.
Yes.
And the columbines too, and biennials, things like that. I'll harvest and I won't store them over the winter. I'll just take them where I want them. next year and sow them right away, because that's what will happen in nature.
So would you cut off the dried seed heads?
Well,
and move them around, or would you, what would you do?
Verbena bonariensis hates me.
Yeah.
So, and I have a little bowl of gravel with some Semper Vivens in it, and the verbena grows in that and nowhere else.
Oh, it sows into like a pot of something?
It sows into a big container that's gravelly. But even on the gravel, there's parts of the garden that are mulched with gravel. Nope. And I also get a kind of disfiguring thing at the tips. This is just a plant that doesn't like me.
Okay.
You know, I think it's another sun thing. I think it really wants a lot of sun.
So that's one that, but we could, if we're doing well with it and we have it in one place and we'd like it in another place, you're saying we could move it when the seed's ripe, when the seed's starting to dry, we could move it now, not put it inside and store it and then sow it next year. Right. Okay. And angelicas, some of the biennial angelicas like Aegis and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Verbascum, the mullein.
Verbascums, uh-huh. So you would do the same thing with that?
Yeah, and columbines really aren't annuals. And even for me, they're sort of short-lived perennials. Right. So they sometimes come back for like 2 years.
Yeah.
But I sow them so I've already sowed them. If I want to, actually, I did move some. So if I want those, I harvest the seed, which is pretty easy. I did that in the bag, and then put the seeds where I want them because I don't want them in the path.
Right,
so I weeded them out and moved them to a nicer place. I also gave some seeds to friends. And with our issues with transferring critters, I think sharing seed is a pretty safe way to do it.
Now, what about like opium poppies, the bread seed poppies, things like that? Would you sow those now too if you had the sort of shaker, you know, the beautiful seed pods right now filled with seed? Would you kind of go shake them somewhere else? Or
shake them? That's interesting, because that's another one that, you know, you blink and you've missed it.
Right.
The seeds, which are so tiny, just pour out. So I watch that. And if I'm really serious, I'll either cut the stem, turn it upside down in a paper bag, or I'll put a bag over the stem. Stems are pretty thin, so it's not that easy. And that's not for perennial poppies. That's a whole different thing.
Right.
This is for the hardy annuals and annual poppies.
Right. And what about like morning glories and moonflowers? Have you ever saved seed of those?
I have. Morning glories and moonflowers make pods that are dry. And you can, they don't split open surprise like daylilies. Daylilies have really nice fleshy green fruits. And then one day they're brown, split open, and the seeds are gone.
So real quick, I wanted to just ask you about one of the things that I've seen pictures from you and your books and things like that about were Jack in the Pulpits, which is, you know, we're talking about a perennial and so forth. Is that something that right now we can go look for if we have it in the garden, we could maybe make more
very
of it?
Soon. And it makes kind of a club with red fruits. They're not quite berries, but they're all over the club. And every seed has a mechanism that keeps it from sprouting or germinating in the wrong place at the wrong time. Some, you know, otherwise sunflowers would sprout right on the flower head, but they don't.
Right.
And a lot of things that have moist fruits, it's the fruit that keeps them from germinating. That's why when the fruit falls to the ground, it has to rot over winter, be cold, and then the fungi come and the seed ultimately is exposed. But almost every year, I'll collect the fruits, wash off the pulp, and if I want, I can sow them right away in like October, and they come up in 3 weeks.
So sow them indoors in a pot, or sow them
indoors in a pot under lights.
Okay. All right. So that would be another
that
one.
Sounds
that
hard, but
right. No. But if that's another one, we can give a link to a little more information, and we'll get some pictures on the with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com. But
great.
But we can. But that's another one that if we have it in the garden, you know, they're not cheap plants to buy if you can find them in a native plant nursery or whatever. But you could make more. Yeah. if you have it in your garden. I'm not saying stealing it from the wild or anything like that. I'm saying, you know,
right. But sometimes over the years, I've gotten some very weird ones from seed saving clubs and things, exchanges.
Right.
And it doesn't work quite like that because you have to rehydrate them. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I couldn't get them to germinate no matter what. And I talked to a person in the Rock Garden Society, and he told me you have to rehydrate them. You have to put them in water and change the water two or three times a day for 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And as you may know, that I put them in a organza bag and hung them in the tank, not the bowl, in the tank of the toilet. And right. The water got changed to more than two or three times a day, lots of oxygen. And right. After 2 weeks, I sowed them and they came up.
Oh, secret unlocked. So I want to talk about some vegetables. And a friend, another Ken friend of mine, Ken Green from Hudson Valley Seed, said to me years ago, you know, that the easiest things in the vegetable garden were bush beans. And he specified bush versus pole, which I didn't know this.
Why?
Bush beans cross-pollinate less than pole beans. So you're more likely to get what you started with. And peas, those are easy. And, you know, the pods are when they're ready to split open and they're rattling inside the pods, they're ready. Right. Cilantro and dill, both, he said, very easy. And dill, as anyone who's ever grown it and had it sow around the garden knows, it's pretty prolific. Speaking of one that needs a paper bag on its head before it lets go. And lettuce is another one that's easy and sends up, you know, little tiny yellow aster-like flowers and so forth. And then open pollinated, you know, non-hybrid tomatoes. And speaking of wet seed, those are one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't know if we have time, but can you walk people through the tomato seed collection?
Well, real quick, and one thing, it's good news, it's not too late, because no one recommends using your first fruit. Your first flush of fruit is the one not to save from. You want to save a little later into the fruiting cycle, not your very first fruits. And who, I don't even think I understand why, but everyone from Seed Savers Exchange, et cetera, all recommend you don't use the first fruits that are formed for your seed saving. you know, you save it when the fruits are at the edible stage, and you, a good thing to do is do your seed saving when you're doing some cooking, make some sauce or gazpacho or whatever, salsa with the rest of it. You know, 'cause you're just basically squeezing out the gooey inside parts with the seeds in it, and all the rest is fair game for cooking. So, you know, you could just smear it, the innards with the seeds, onto a paper plate or a paper towel and then let it dry and use the seed. But the natural act of fermenting, which is a little bit of an extra step, will help break down germination inhibiting compounds, so you'll get better germination. That gel sac around the tomato seeds has some of those in it, and also can reduce some very unwanted diseases that are seed specific that you wouldn't even know you had because they're seed specific. So you use your healthiest, most disease resistant, productive plants. You wait until they fruited a bit, and then you from a, you know, a couple of different plants, if you have multiples of a variety, you take a couple of fruits from each, and you can put them in water. You know, I just kind of squeeze the inside into, you know, have the fruits and squeeze the seeds and pulp into a jar, labeled, by the way, because they all look the same, and add a, you know, kind of an equal amount of water. And put like a piece of paper towel with a rubber band or a piece of cheesecloth if you have it, or a screen, so that nothing gets in there, and just let the mixture sit, half water, half pulp slash seed, out of the sun for several days. It's gonna get smelly, a mold surface is gonna form, you skim that off, and then you rinse the seeds in a strainer, and then you dry them on that paper plate or paper towel. So it's this extra step that gives you a little more, a little better quality. So not hard.
I hate to say it sounds like fun.
It is kind of fun. And it's kind of like, it's like the mad scientist, you know, this gooey, weird, foamy stuff is happening.
If you got kids around this.
Yeah. This is a good and thing. To show them that seed's alive and explain why it's happening. That's a good point. Any other, in the last minute or so, any other thing that you'd like us to try that you feel is like a really, like, I mean, I know you've done lilies and you've done all kinds
of things. We've covered so many things. And,
yeah.
And, well, I have to say, over the years, I have, you know, intentionally crossed things. Uh-oh. Oh, and, you know, I was talking about that tree that I grew 30-some years ago. I sowed a lot of those maple seeds from a tree I had in Brooklyn. And the tree, I have two trees here now. And one of them is about, I'd say, 12 feet tall and spreading and has that beautiful fall color. But another one, ever since it came up, was very small. And now it's about 3 feet tall in the same age. So oh. I accidentally got a dwarf.
Oh, how funny.
So
oh, cool.
When you're collecting things yeah. around the garden, you can do it, you know, you can take the pollen from one and put it on another one and yeah. be careful and or use a paintbrush to try to make your own daylily. Not that we need another one with 50,000. But I was very fortunate just by accident to get a dwarf maple tree.
Well, with that, on that note of the miracles of genetics, thank you, Ken. And I'll talk to you soon. And I'll talk to you on the Virtual Margaret. Garden Club too soon. So
yeah,
talk to
you meet soon. You there. Okay.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy seed saving and gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.